You're listening to Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we're talking with Val Head about CSS animations. I'm your host, Leia Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
Today's episode is sponsored by Visual Chefs, a versatile web development agency with expertise in content management system and custom web application development. Through partnerships with designers, agencies, and organizations, Visual Chefs propels the web forward.
Control Click would also like to thank Pixel and Tonic for being our major sponsor. Today, our guest is one of my favoriteest people, Val Head, and our topic is my second favorite subject after HTML, CSS. Val is joining us today to talk about CSS animations. She's a very talented designer and front-end dev, as well as an educator and speaker. She also co-hosts the Ladies in Tech podcast, which features interviews with people about their speaking experiences. Welcome to the show, Val.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me and for such an awesome intro. That was really nice.
Speaking of intros, Val, can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Yeah, sure. I just moved back to Pittsburgh from Philadelphia. I was there for a little while. So I have a new life mission of making sure everyone is as confused as possible about Pennsylvania geography. I'm doing my best to make it impossible for anyone to keep track. But it's really nice. There's a really great community here in Pittsburgh. And now that we're back in town, we're back to running the Refresh Pittsburgh group and, kind of actually pretty much just today starting plans for the web conference we run here, Web Design Day. So it's crazy. That's next June, but it's already time to start planning it.
Oh, wow. Busy.
Yeah. I'm never bored, I guess. How to put some people. I was just in North Carolina doing a conference and they were like, "We are so impressed with your energy." I'm like, "Oh, that's really good." That's really sweet. But I'm like, I think they're also saying that like, maybe I have too much of it. I don't know.
No, never.
I don't think any conference organizer would ever want a speaker with lower energy.
Yeah, I feel like that's why it was a Friday-Saturday conference, and I feel like that's why I got the 4 p.m. Saturday slot. They're like, no one can fall asleep through this.
So I'm actually looking at your slide deck from this weekend's conference, BlendConf. Mm-hmm. So you did something on kind of like the role of a web designer / motion designer?
Yeah. Basically, it was all about applying, motion design principles when we are animating things in CSS for the web. I did it in the context of CSS because, it's only 45 minutes. You can't talk about every language. But basically, the idea that, we've got these, we're starting to add more animations to our interface on our web design interfaces, our websites and everything. And none of us are really trained as motion designers. So sometimes making those decisions is tough because you have no background in it. So that talk was kind of like the 45-minute crash course into like how to approach these decisions thinking like a motion designer. And it was really fun.
That's so funny because I just feel like the more things change, the more they stay the same with the web. Mm-hmm. Because 10, 20 years ago, that was the same topic when we were trying to transition from print design to web design and being like, okay, we're kind of teaching ourselves how to do this. And it only feels like it took a long time for us to understand, okay, gestalt, white space, typography and hierarchy. And I mean, those things have been established in graphic design for a long time, but it feels like it took a long time until CSS and HTML and browsers got the tools available to make that a lot easier to implement.
Yeah. And it's kind of like as web designers, we have to be a little bit of everything and that everything just keeps expanding, expanding the more new stuff we get to do on the web, which is, both exciting and sometimes really annoying because you're like, God, I thought I just figured this stuff out. And it's like, nope, there's more.
How did you pick up motion design skills? Is it something that you were formally educated in, self-taught? Did you have a project where it was just you had to sink or swim?
A little bit of both. I actually kind of got into web design through animation. I had taken an animation course and it was all taught in Flash, which kind of then spiraled into the whole thing. It's actually the whole reason I ever learned programming as well. They were like, oh, hey, you can write this code to make the animations happen. And I was like, that has changed my whole life. That is so amazing. So that kind of led me into web stuff. And I'd always been kind of involved in a lot of Flash work, doing a lot of like kiosk type stuff, some web stuff, things that were always expected to be animated UIs, whereas the web maybe not so much. So it's just kind of been really you know, doing that, working with that. And also one of my jobs for a long time was working at a place that also did video and a lot of video work. So working with those video editors and the motion graphics people, I picked up a lot from that. So it's really cool to be able to actually do that on the web using actual like proper web technologies and stuff. Nice. So, I mean, I find that really exciting. I'm like, we can use CSS to make this stuff happen. That's amazing. At least that's my reaction to it.
So before we talk about coding, let's talk about podcasting. Yeah. How is the Ladies in Tech podcast going?
It's going good. We sort of have been taking a couple of months off, mostly because I picked up and moved rather unexpectedly. Strangely, tough to do podcasting while moving. you know, no matter how well you pack, there's always something you can't find for weeks. So we're hoping to pick it back up in a few weeks. But, you know, the summer was a pretty crazy time for us. And I'm sure for you guys, too, of just having people being available over the summer. Most people are like, no, I'm taking time off. And you're like, crazy time to do that in August. But we've been getting lots of great feedback on it. And the advice we've gotten from a lot of our guests of like how to approach getting on stage, how to approach prepping to be on stage. There's just been some really great advice and some amazing stories. So it's been really great to share that with people.
So what do you think you've learned about the entire process in Ladies in Tech beyond just the speaking? Like, how about podcasting?
It's definitely a lot more involved than I would have thought. You know, it's not like you just go and record and you're done. It's like you have to edit and you have to like find a time everyone's available. And it's a lot of coordination. and the editing stuff especially, I think the first few episodes I edited, I think took me like about 500 times longer than I ever would have expected.
Been there.
They're like, wow, it's been a long time since I've had to edit audio. What do you know? It's a little complicated sometimes. So, but once we got like actually spent some money on good mics and actually both had the same mic, it's like little things like that. Suddenly everything gets much easier. Like, wow, this is why people use good equipment. Right.
Well, and the focus of the podcast is about speaking, and you speak often. In fact, I met you at Rust Belt Refresh when you presented. Have you learned like one really great takeaway from about speaking from some of your podcast guests?
I think probably the biggest one that I thought was most interesting was just the fact that I think everyone we've spoken to, except for one person, always said like they still get nervous, and you know there is that nervous energy no matter how many times you've done it. It's just kind of learning how to handle it, and you know your reaction to that nervousness. But everyone still gets nervous. I think that's really, really useful because I know I always kind of expected like, oh, eventually this will be like really easy and you won't even think twice about getting up on stage. But that's not how it works. Unless you're the one person who said they don't get nervous. But I kind of think he was lying. Like, yeah, I don't believe you. Anyways, he's a good friend of mine, so I can say that. But I'm like, yeah, I think I don't think you're being honest with us here.
All right, so let's get to today's topic. I want to just sort of start with the basics. From a definition standpoint, like what is a CSS animation?
Well, it does get really confusing because there is a specification for CSS animation, which applies specifically to the idea of spelling out keyframes and then applying that list of keyframes to an element. But most normal humans and pretty much anything except CSS defines animation as like anything that causes change over time, right? Things that change over time is generally considered animation. So CSS animation in the general sense usually applies to any way you've created movement in CSS, whether that's a transition, properly a transition, or properly a keyframe animation. So that just makes it all nice and confusing.
Well, you mentioned keyframe animation, you mentioned transitions. So what is the difference between animation, transition, and what about transforms? Do those enter the picture with CSS animations?
Yeah, definitely. All three of those things. Transforms are basically, I like to call them the yoga of CSS, because basically you can use transforms to manipulate the way an element appears. You know, like it's not just this flat square. You can, you know, skew it, you can rotate it, you can scale it. You can even do like 3D matrix transforms, which is serious mathy business. Like there's so much you can do to manipulate the way an element looks with transforms, but they never actually cause any motion on their own. They just are a very performant way of changing the way something looks, which is why we use it so often with transitions and animations. Transitions, which of course sound very similar to transforms, so we can all trip over our words a whole lot. Transitions essentially make a nice, smooth change in a property between two states, between like A and B. Like when you apply a transition and then you might change the background color of something on hover, the transition would make sure that's a nice smooth move from one color to the next and not just like a hard jump. So transitions are generally between point A and B, and the best thing about transitions is that it will always go back all on its own. And if you've ever had to program like JavaScript rollovers, you know how awesome it is that in one line it takes care of both the on and off. It's amazing. It's like, that's so great. I kind of want to hug them. And animations kind of build on transitions in that they're not just from point A to point B. You can have as many points as you want. You create this list of everything you want to have happen over the course of an animation. That's your list of keyframes. And, you know, you could basically, you're really only limited by your patience to write these out in a sense. Like you could be almost infinite number of steps. I don't know if I'd recommend it because that might drive you insane, but you could. And then you take that list of things you want to have change and you can apply it to your element, like any element on your page, essentially. And then to say, I'd like you to use this set of keyframes, have them take 2 seconds to complete, you know, repeat them 4 times or however else. So there's a lot of flexibility in that sense. Once you've defined what changes you'd like to see over time, you can make it take a long time, make it be short, you know, have it go play backwards or forwards or repeat once or repeat infinitely. So there's a lot of flexibility and a lot covered between those three seemingly simple sounding things.
So Val, you have a series of screencasts you're doing right now on CSS animations. And I watched the first one, which talked about CSS animation events, and that relies on JavaScript and CSS. And I'm just curious, is that standard? Is JavaScript always needed, or are there purely CSS animation solutions?
There's definitely just straight up like CSS solutions. It kind of comes down to the fact that CSS is still a markup language. It's still kind of unaware of what's being manipulated around it. Like kind of similarly how we can do hovers in CSS, you know, that's kind of the limit of interactions, right? Like you can tell when you're an object's being hovered over, but you don't know exactly where the mouse pointer is, say, at a given point in time. And that's traditionally something handled by JavaScript. So that kind of like higher level of knowing what's going on is still only available in JavaScript, but it kind of makes sense because JavaScript is a scripting language and CSS is really more still a markup language, which is where that kind of, I guess, the geeky area of the definition or the split goes. But you can definitely do all sorts of animations with CSS with no JavaScript at all. It comes to a point where if you want to know things, when exactly has this animation ended because I would like to trigger some other behavior, that just makes a lot more sense to do in JavaScript because it knows that kind of thing. And if you were probably also tracking other events, and that's kind of all in the realm of JavaScript. But you don't have to use them. You don't have to use JavaScript to get CSS animation. It just tends to be when you want to do more advanced or more complex things, it helps out a lot.
So I was just thinking in regards to that, part of my confusion, or I guess my concern in regards to CSS animations and even using JavaScript, should animations even be part of CSS? Because you mentioned, you know, CSS is part of markup. CSS is about separating the style from the content. And then now we're adding like a next level of interaction. And old school thinking is about, well, interaction any further than, as you mentioned, like hover states or something would be under JavaScript. And now it feels like animation is part of CSS. Like, what do you think about that transition? Like, how can you bridge that gap in, and why is it in CSS now?
I mean, I don't know exactly why it's in CSS, but I kind of don't mind. Separating the kind of like behavior from the presentation is still pretty easy to do, even if it crosses languages. I mean, you can have all your animations in a specific style sheet or a specific place and kind of like how you pack, especially with like preprocessors, right? Like you can have a behavioral CSS file that you kind of package all together with your SAS puzzle making. Well, however the real term for that is, where it packages up all your partials and spits out your CSS.
Sure.
So it's really easy to separate it even if it crosses languages. And I think that the really interesting thing about CSS being able to do this is that now these really small bits of interaction, you know, the ones that even just things like smooth hover states as opposed to these jarring cuts, like just those little bits that just add a tiny bit to the interaction, small movements, small additions. Previously, you'd have to be like, oh, great, now I have to like add jQuery. I'm going to have to write my hover script and like, like that whole, because that's the sound we made when we did that. I'm not sure what you guys sound like when you do programming, but it's always that barfy noise for me. but that was like a huge buy-in, right? Or you'd be, you know, what happened to us a lot with these, we'd make these hybrid Flash / HTML sites because we wanted animated navigation. And there were some really well done Flash animated navigations as far as like an interaction standpoint, but you still had this huge problem of now part of our website is this big black box. It's our navigation. We have to do all this extra work to make it speak to the rest of our website so we don't make something that's crappy. And that's a lot of work. And the fact that CSS can now handle these bits of interaction means we can just add them in with what we were already using, and that huge buy-in, that huge extra bit of technology you'd need just to add like a nice hover, it's totally gone. And we can do this easily with what we're already using. And that's the stuff that I think CSS animations is really best at, is these, you know, small bits of interaction that when done well can really push what you're doing over the top as far as design goes and just like the pleasure of interacting with it. And we can do it without having this huge technical overhead. Yeah, I think that's really great. And really changes the way we can approach this on the web.
That actually is a good sort of introduction to a question we got from our listener, Kevin Lazandier. And he asked, what are some examples that you felt CSS animations weren't used to their potential? You know, something on different sites that you feel that CSS animations would be really effective at making it a stronger experience.
Oh, gee, that's a tough one to pull out a specific example. But I think in general, anything that that these days is like one of those simpler interactions like hovers or that kind of thing that goes through all the trouble of like writing jQuery animate stuff, I feel like they could have saved themselves huge headaches if they did it in CSS. Although, you know, there's still also the whole, you know, IE8 situation where, honestly, if you need to support IE8, you should probably just write this stuff in JavaScript so you're not writing it twice. You know, like there's so many exceptions and stuff. But I think the other good thing about the fact that CSS can do this is it gets us thinking about these ideas as being something we can include in our design, something we should be considering as part of our design process. You know, like these things are so readily available and so easily implemented, like it's kind of hard to ignore them and to not consider it, which is great because the web's been this kind of very static, hard-cut place, at least as far as building a web standards has gone, for a really long time. And I'm pretty happy with the fact that it doesn't have to be that way anymore. Like we've kind of opened the doors to all sorts of fun new stuff.
Yeah, I'm actually having a difficult time kind of envisioning where CSS animations would be on a site. Mm-hmm. But what you're describing to me in my head, I feel like you're just sort of saying making the interactions that are already there a little smoother or more elegant. Mm-hmm. Or is that like a fundamental or a really simple way of introducing animations? And then there's just a lot more you can do. Like, do we want people to like spin stuff? Like, I guess that's what I'm asking. Like, it's, can you take this too far?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I recently wrote a List Apart article about that question specifically, really, of like, where can you add animation in a way that's helpful? Because as much as this stuff is new to have it in CSS, it's also not new because we've seen it done terribly many times over with like Flash intros, right? Like, no one wants to do that again. But there's definitely places where you can support the UX of what you're doing, actually make a task perhaps easier to follow by just adding bits of movement and motion that will actually like help people follow what's happening, help them see where a menu came from or where it's going. When there's an animation there as opposed to a hard cut, suddenly you've got that information of the path it took to get there, as opposed to something just like appearing and you're like, what? Where'd that come from? How do I get it back? You know, it's adding a little bit more information to some of these interactions in that can help make them easier to follow. And the fact that we're doing it in CSS means you can still really easily, you know, have the whole idea of progressive enhancement where, you know, if they're not supported, it's just not there and it's not like you've broken everything. So definitely a good article to check out for some of those examples, because I break down a few of them of where it's useful. And I think even just having the idea of looking for these places where it could help, it's kind of a tough adjustment, right? Because you're just so used to never being able to do it. Why would you ever consider it? So it's kind of looking out for them and then testing out what might work and what might not, and see how it feels for you and what you're trying to communicate.
Do you think the rise of mobile first and app design is what has propelled CSS animations? Because when I'm thinking of possibilities of where CSS animations are, and I'm looking at your slides over like some examples over like bouncing and all those kind of things, it's very reminiscent of my iPhone, right? Yeah. Like, you know, when things like slide and they kind of have a give and take bounce or whatever. Do you think that it was mobile that was pushing CSS animations?
I think that's what's pushing us to maybe consider using them more, because I feel like the way a lot of native apps work has changed people's perception, like people using the stuff we make has changed their perception of what interaction should be like. If all of your apps have these great like transitional interfaces and there's really smooth transitions and like you can manipulate things by dragging them and they respond to you in a certain like non-static way, and then you go on the web and everything's like click, wait for next thing, statically appears, like a hard cut to it. Suddenly it feels like the web's kind of behind, you know? It's like, doesn't feel like as sophisticated or as, you know, just it feels like it's fallen behind, maybe whether it's a trendy thing or just the way it feels to use it, you feel like something's missing. And I think that's part of what's driven us to look at more ways to include this and not just be like, eh, who cares? You know, it's like, oh, there is a sophistication that's added to this. It is one of the ways we can use design to differentiate our product or to make what we're building easier to use. I think the expectations of mobile and seeing that on mobile screens has kind of forced us to look at this and take it seriously.
I'm curious about the impact that CSS animations have in terms of performance. Are they processing hogs? Like, is it equivalent to, you know, some massive JavaScript file, or is it pretty compact and not really a hit to the browser, whether we're talking mobile or even desktop?
Like most things, it can be both, depending on how you use it, right? It's like, if you try hard enough, you can make anything perform badly. But by their nature, CSS animations are all interpreted by the browser, right? So a lot of it depends on how well the browser is equipped to handle them. There's obviously, or maybe not obviously, but there are a number of properties that perform better than others when you're animating them. And essentially, it kind of comes down to, if you're animating or transitioning properties that are transforms or changes in opacity, you're going to get the best performance. Paul Lewis from Google, I think he's on the Chrome team in some way, has written some really great articles about why those properties perform better, and, you know, what happens under the hood to make them be better. And there's that kind of thing. You keeping that in mind, you can make some really performant animations, because if you're using those properties that are especially efficient and it's all handled in the browser and you're not like pulling in an extra script because it's all in your CSS, there's potential there to be amazingly efficient. But of course, there's other considerations as well, and not all browsers are as good at CSS animations as others. You know, I like to say that the best thing about CSS animations is it's all handled by the browser, and the worst thing about CSS animations is it's all handled in the browser. You know, it's kind of how things have always been, right? It's like, browsers don't implement the spec the same way. Some of them do stuff well, some of them do it really craptastically, and we're kind of at their mercy. So there's definitely potential to be very performant, and I think things are always improving, especially if you're mostly focused on modern browsers. Android is always an issue for like everything. It has some very fun quirks with CSS animation, as it does with like everything. So there's definitely a lot of things to look out for, and there's potential for it to be more performant than adding extra scripts, of course. But sometimes the reality of what you're trying to do in the browsers you need to support, you may have to go for a heavier option because it might be better to have it there and have it be more costly as far as performance goes, or, you know, HTTP request goes, but still have it like work. So the landscape is a little tricky in that sense. There's no one answer to that question. And I don't know if there ever will be. Like, I'm always skeptical of articles or tools that are like, we are more performant than any other option out there, no matter what. It's like, yeah, I don't think that's possible. Yeah. I feel like the it depends answer becomes the answer to more and more questions the more we move forward with this.
Well, I'm curious a little bit about the browser support issue and like the testing for that.
Yeah.
Now, like in static sites, you can, there's so many devices, there's so many like browsers and all these kind of things. And for example, something like Browser Stack will send you screenshots, but all of that is static. So how do you test to make sure that your animation works in as many browsers as you can?
I mean, there's a couple things. If you look at things up on Can I Use, you'll see which ones have the questionable support. And like, honestly, most of them are all like, yes, green square supported, except for like older IE, depending on what you're doing. Opera Mini, which is just like, doesn't believe in doing anything normal. And Android, is it 4.3 and under, I think? I might be getting that version number wrong. So it's pretty obvious to see which ones you might want to double check on as far as that goes. So usually checking it out, I mean, the best way to do it is to check it out on devices themselves just to see how it actually works in the proper context. Emulators will give you some idea as well, and that's kind of the best plan. But the nice thing is it's not like you have to be like, oh, I need to check every single thing to make sure they're all the same. It's like, it's easy to identify where your potential problems may be and trying to look at those ones.
Well, and for those problems, you had mentioned earlier progressive enhancement. Is that generally the approach you take?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like all CSS, if a browser completely does not support it, it's just going to ignore it. Mm-hmm. And if you build your animations in a way that you're kind of thinking of that, actually one of my All the Right Moves episodes is about this as well, like how to kind of structure things so that way, you know, if the animation is completely not supported, it won't be broken. But if it is supported, you'll see it. The tricky bit is some of the older Android browsers, and this is why they're such a pain in that way, is they say they support it. It comes back as like, yeah, totally got it. But they don't. You know, they have some really strange quirks of like only being able to animate one property at a time. So you need to write some very specific, you have to be very careful how you write your animations and transitions to have them work in that browser because, you know, it says it supports it all, but it doesn't really. So that can be a little tricky. And some people, the solution to that is to do it all in JavaScript still because then they don't have to worry about it. Some people, it's like, I don't care about that browser. It's such a small percentage of who's using this site. It's okay if it looks a little broken, or structuring it in such a way that it doesn't look too broken. It's like one of those, whatever is best for your, you know, making an educated solution or the best solution for the variables at hand for your project. Like, there's no one good answer for that. A lot of the time, depending on what it is it's animating and what content is in there and how it affects the overall content, you know, you may be able to just do nothing and it'll be fine, or you may have to go through some effort. Just kind of, I guess, the reality of what we do, right?
So if I was trying to get familiar with all of these aspects, what are your top resources for figuring out the attributes, the properties, and syntax of animating with CSS?
Well, I would recommend, as far as the syntax goes, definitely read anything but the actual spec because it's so hard to understand. I have a really, I mean, to like self-promote stuff, I have a really, an ebook out on 5 Simple Steps that goes through actually all the little properties and stuff. And I also have a lynda.com course on that if you're into those. But also a lot of CodePen stuff is great for that. Like, look up things on the CSS animation tag and see how other people are using it. It is especially great for getting tips on how to use Sass to make writing animations even more efficient, which is kind of like one step past what you're asking about. But seeing some of the little tricks people use to like use the preprocessors and make their lives easier is awesome. I love CodePen, especially for playing with animations and transitions and everything, because you can just check the like prefix free box and you never have to write your own prefixes. So you can actually just focus on like trying things out as opposed to debugging whether you've got all your prefixes in there for like 20 minutes or something. So the CodePen stuff is great for that too, is just seeing what other people are doing with it, and you can pick up some great tips.
You know, you mentioned CodePen. Is that where you sort of do the first part of your coding of animations and then you move it into like your own text editor once you can see that it's working? Or do you work right from your text editor and CodePen's more like for playing around?
For my projects, it's usually more just for playing around, but then the playing around stuff often ends up in real projects. You know, like I always use CodePen for workshops and for talks because it's just so easy to like have it right up there. I'm not usually organized enough to be like, I will go in CodePen and try out this idea. I'm usually kind of like, I will try it with what I have open right now. But
so you don't have like a special text editor for this? Any sort of special like add-on for a text editor for making animation, writing CSS animation more efficient or easier?
I guess a little bit. I mean, I always set up auto prefixer because I use, SAS and everything in my own projects. So I always make sure I have auto prefixer set up in my basic projects. So that way I never have to write prefixes myself because they drive me crazy. If you've used the Atom text editor, you can actually edit animation curves and easing in the editor itself, which is really interesting. But one thing we are definitely lacking in right now is like good visual editors for this stuff. There really isn't. So a lot of the time, especially since I really work more on the design side of things, I'll create little motion mock-ups or, you know, whether it's like a little mini storyboard and that's how we'll talk about what might move, or even like a little thing in like After Effects or Flash of being like, here's how I think it should move. How are we going to pull this off? You know, and which way, and kind of building it from there. Because I find it's really tough for a lot of people. And in the same way that designing in the browser straight up is really tough, it's really tough to design motion like with a text editor because you're just, you're in a different frame of mind, right? Like you're worried about syntax and everything and like prefixes when you should be worried about like, is this motion communicating what I want it to? You know, you're trying to do a very visual thing with code and that isn't always the best or easiest way to do it. You know, we all kind of have different ways of working and that's a tough one to really get into. It's a tough way to get things done. So I'm really looking forward to like, there's some tools out there that do this visually a little bit like Adobe Edge and Essentia and that kind of thing. Neither of them are really perfect. I know that Mozilla is working on a CSS animations editor in the browser and I'm very excited to see what that's going to be. I'm hoping that will be my answer. Because that sounds very promising.
So I'm just curious then, you know, you mentioned all these tools, but you also mentioned storyboarding. So do you actually sketch it out or do you actually go to a piece of software and stick figure it? I don't know.
Usually it's really horrible drawings in my sketchbook that are like messy and terrible and just kind of thinking through in my head how those should be. And generally, before I show it to someone else, I might like kind of mock it up in Photoshop, like as part of an element collage or something of like, here's three different states of the button and here's how it might work. Because I find that my messy sketches are very hard to have conversations about because most people can't tell what I mean.
Sure.
It's like the brain dump, right? And it's just, and then yeah, moving to, depending on how it's going to be built and how complex the interactions might be, moving to something like Flash or After Effects to like have a moving prototype of it. That seems to be a good workflow as well. So that's part of the reason why I'm very excited about this idea of having a visual way to edit CSS animations, because then you could skip that whole step of working in other tools and like literally just do it in the browser. And I think that would be pretty darn cool.
Now, do you have any top resources that you would suggest someone go to get inspiration on how to, or even where to effectively use web animations?
I think as far as like getting inspiration, there's a couple of sites I really like for it. Art of the Title, which is all about opening title animations for film and TV. I find that particularly interesting because a lot of the time they're dealing with things like animating type and all this kind of stuff. And it's, they're all trying to accomplish, you know, telling you or hinting at the story of the movie or the TV show using, you know, text and images. And that feels pretty similar to web design sometimes. There's also a couple of really good mobile galleries of like how I think Captivate.io is one of them, which looks at kind of showing very specific native app interactions, which I think is, it's nice to see those all collected up because we use a lot of these apps. And I don't know if we're always, you know, really cataloging in our minds how they do what they do. So seeing them broken out is really helpful. I think those are great places to look for it because I feel like not that we don't do it well on the web, we do, but looking outside of the web, I think is a better place because they've been doing it longer, you know? You know, they've been animating titles for like 50 years.
Sure.
And as far as more traditional animation principles, I'm looking up Disney's Illusion of Life. There's a great Wikipedia page that explains it and a bunch of Tumblrs that explain these concepts very well. They do it in the context of traditional animation, but knowing that stuff and just kind of keeping an eye out for it while you're doing animation for interfaces is a really helpful way to kind of frame your approach to deciding things like, does this look right? You know, that's a hard question to answer.
So you mentioned a little bit earlier your book on CSS animations, The Pocket Guide. And I actually read a recent blog post on your site about how you went and experimented briefly with a pay-as-you-want model. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, that was an interesting little like business adventure, I guess, for me. for various reasons, I had no publisher for a little while, and I kind of found out with almost no notice, like all the authors did. And so it was kind of like all of a sudden my book was no longer available to anyone at all, anywhere. And I wasn't really sure what to do. So I decided I would put it up on my own site and make paying for it completely optional. And if people did want to pay for it, they could pick any price they wanted. And it was kind of a tough decision to make because I was a little scared. I had no idea if it would work. but it actually did. You know, most people were downloading the book for free, of course, but a pretty significant amount of people were paying for it, like, completely voluntarily and, you know, paying reasonable prices for it as well. And that was pretty, I don't know, it was a really great learning experience and made me very happy to see that you could actually pull something like that off, you know. Obviously, I did it with almost no planning, and that meant it probably wasn't as successful as it could be. But it's not too much of a stretch to think if you actually, like, planned ahead a little more and, you know, had a promotional plan for it, a marketing plan, you could actually release a product like that and make out all right. So I was like, oh, yay, web community. We're like responsible, honest people who actually pay for useful information. That's so great. I kind of want to just give the whole web community like a big bear hug after all that.
Would you do it again?
I would. I think the biggest factor for me is since it just kind of came up so unexpectedly, I didn't have a good plan and I didn't have enough time to devote to it. You know, it's like this sort of thing, you need to keep it in people's minds. You need to have a way to promote it and, you know, market it. And I just had like no time at all to do that. So obviously there's like, you could kind of just see where I stopped talking about it, how it just like sales kind of plummeted. So I would do it again, but only if I had the time to devote to it, which sometimes is much easier said than done.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, I feel like this is a model that a lot of web professionals are testing out these days. And I feel like 37 Signals was like the first to try to deal with that because, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of this information can be found online, but we want to have like a more like organized,
packaged,
and perhaps sometimes even the language being used can be different when it's like an edited, vetted, you know, organized book versus scattered articles of, I just tried this out, let me tell you what you did, you know, that kind of thing. And I remember 37 Signals when they first even set out their best-selling books or whatever, they were actually just a collection of their blog posts organized. So yeah, it's definitely interesting. I'm always so fascinated to see how people push their businesses and business models and testing things out and what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see. And it was very different to be trying it too, you know, because like I'd seen the 37 Signals stuff and various other ones.
Sure.
Dan Schiffman did one kind of in the processing world that went really well. But it's so different when you're like, this is my thing that I worked on. And you're like, holy crap, what if it doesn't work?
What if nobody pays nothing?
Like, what if nobody buys it at all? So it's something totally worth trying. And I'm really glad I tried it out and that I was brave enough to experiment with it and see what happened. Because now I'm like, this is it's completely something I would consider trying the next time I have a book or some other product. You know, it's completely a viable option, which is pretty amazing. So I'd recommend at least considering it.
Very cool. So before we wrap up, I just want to know if you've got any final pieces of advice that people could do today regarding CSS animation.
I would say go out and, you know, check out CodePen, give it a try, see what other people are doing with it experimentally there. And, you know, just mess around with it, try it out, fork an example on CodePen, see what you can do with it. Start with someone else's stuff and mess with it and see if you can change it. I think that's the most fun way to learn this type of stuff. Starting with a blank screen sucks no matter what you're doing. It's never a fun way to start.
Very cool. Well, you've given us a lot to think about and experiment with. But before we finish up, we have our rapid fire 10 questions.
Okay.
So our listeners can get to know you a bit better. Are you ready, Val?
I am.
Okay, first question. Mac OS or Windows?
Mac.
What is your favorite mobile app?
Kennedy,
oh, what's that?
It's kind of just like for saving moments, and it has this weird way of pairing up like photos or notes you take about where you are with like headlines. And sometimes the combinations are hilarious, and it's just great to look back on stuff.
Oh, very cool. What is your least favorite thing about social media?
Facebook.
what profession other than yours would you like to attempt?
I would love to be someone who does installation art or interior, responsive interiors. I think that would be really fun.
Cool. So what profession would you not like to do?
Primary school teacher. Oh my God, I don't know how they do it.
Who is the web professional you admire the most?
Oh no, that's such a hard question. I don't think I can answer that one. I would need a really long list.
All right. What music do you like to code to?
I like to code to ambient, like indie rock stuff, like Explosions in the Sky, Do Make Say Think, that kind of thing. Things without words.
What's your secret talent?
I am secretly a vegan cupcake expert. Vegan cupcake baking expert.
Oh, that's
except
nice.
I just gave it away, so I'm not a secret anymore.
What's the most recent book you've read?
I am actually reading the Monty Python guy, Michael Palin's diaries over the 70s. It's actually incredibly interesting.
And lastly, Star Wars or Star Trek?
I'm going to have to go with Star Trek on that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Family time when I was growing up was watching Star Trek on like Sunday nights or whatever. So I know so much about Star Trek. It's embarrassing.
That's amazing. So that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. It was really fun.
In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
You guys can find me at valhead.com. That's my main site. I've got links to my video tutorials and book stuff off there if you want to check those out. And also, I tweet way too much, and I'm VLH on Twitter. That's actually probably the easiest way to see what I'm up to because it's a little overkill.
Awesome. Thanks, Val. It was so good to talk to you today.
Thanks, guys.
We'd now like to thank our sponsors for this podcast, Visual Chefs and Pixel and Tonic.
And thanks to our partners, Arcus Tech, Devotee, and EE Insider.
We also want to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Click Cast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you liked this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both.
Don't forget to tune into our next episode when we're talking with illustrator Anton Peck about defining web roles. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leia Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.